Welcome to MGO Radio 3.3. I am Ace Amender, along with Seth Fisher, not Brian Cook. Brian is sick today, so you're going to have to live with us, apparently, which hopefully you'll be able to. Seth, say hi to everybody. I've always wanted to do that.
I hope I'm screwing up the introduction as well as you used
fairly
to.
Well, yeah. You're on my level right now, Seth.
You finally got good enough at it that, like...
No, that's not the case at all. Brian will bring that up if I say I got good at it. We are going to start, as we normally do, with a UFR review, even though Brian isn't here, but both of us have at least read it, and we have watched the Air Force game a couple times.
Actually, as the business guy here, can I request that we start with our sponsors?
That is a good idea.
Okay.
We would like to thank our wonderful sponsors. First of all, we are live in front of a happy hour audience at Holmes Brewery on Jackson Avenue in Ann Arbor.
We are. They can't really see because our video is pointed at your screen instead of my beer here.
We'll fix that at some point.
Yeah.
But we are live from Holmes Brewery, which if you haven't been here, they do game day events. They open at 9 in the morning. For noon kickoffs, they'll be open at 11 o'clock tomorrow. For the 4 p.m. Purdue kickoff, they have drink specials and food specials. You should stop by. We are also sponsored by Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, The Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, and Michigan Law Grad. And now, with the professional part of the podcast out of the way...
Very professionally done.
It is time to go over the UFR, starting with the offense. It was another somewhat uninspiring offensive performance for Michigan.
Yeah, especially, you know, it's kind of time now to say that we're worried about Spate.
I think so. Spate has been, I would say after the review of going back over the UFR, I'm not quite as down on him as I was immediately after the Air Force game, as Brian pointed out. This was a relatively, like, low event day. He only had, like, 26 charted passes. His downfield success rate was right in line with Florida and Cincinnati. It's still below where we'd like to see him. He still missed a few throws. And unfortunately, in this game, we saw something that we hadn't seen in the first two games, which was some bona fide bad reads from Wilton Spate.
That was the real thing. That, like, I mean, the whole thing that we've been banking on this guy. He makes the right reads. He makes the right calls. He'll get them in the right offense and then just miss sometimes. But, I mean, not seeing Perry wide open multiple times when he's your best receiver.
That part is frustrating because Grant Perry, especially against a team like Air Force that runs a ton of man coverage, Grant Perry is very difficult to defend in man. He gets open. Even when those guys are close, Air Force busted a coverage and Spade was looking right at him and didn't even throw it to him. So, I can understand the trust factor issue with, you know, having some true freshman receivers out there. It's a little concerning that he has what seems like a trust factor issue with his most experienced guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably because Perry wasn't there for a lot of practice. So he's throwing the guys that he's practiced with more. And I guess hopefully the more that he gets time to throw to Perry in practice, the more he'll kind of realize that.
That's true. It's going to be interesting to see how he adjusts now that Tariq Black, who unfortunately broke his foot last week, is out. Because Black seemed to be kind of the guy that Spate would look to in certain situations, and now he's going to have to rethink his comfort level with the receivers again.
The thing with Black, his charting, all the guys had, you know, similar amounts of passes thrown. He had 11 easy passes thrown to him.
He's definitely been the beneficiary of some throws that were
also making it easier. He's got a lot of comeback routes that he know they have to respect him deep because he's so big. So
yeah, he's a big target to throw to too.
Right.
So we'll see who ends up replacing him. That is more a thing for the Purdue preview, but we do certainly expect to see a little bit more of Oliver Martin and perhaps even Nico Collins, who is kind of the closest comparable, at least in terms of size.
And, well, I guess the next guy in is Shane Lee.
We'll see. I mean, Shane Lee's still like a true slot for the most part. I don't know. I think with Black on the outside, we're going to see a little bit more
Shane
of the
Lee
other freshmen.
Shane Lee can block.
Well, he also had one of the worst holding calls I've ever seen, so we might want to hold off on the Shane Lee can block thing until we get a little more evidence.
All right.
But to go back to the Air Force game and to Spate, it was another game where Like, you want to say that people are overreacting, but we're starting to get to the point where these things have built up enough where we kind of have to expect that he's going to have a few inexplicable mistakes. That said, it wasn't all on him on Saturday. There were still some protection issues, namely with Nolan Ulizio. And also, his receivers are not doing a tremendous job of helping him out. You had Kakoa Crawford not only drop Spate's best throw of the afternoon, but also on the Spate goal line scramble and then attempted a little floater pass. Crawford really needs to clear out of that play, get to the back of the end zone. He doesn't.
So on that play, I thought, because Perry is running behind that.
I can understand not wanting to get two receivers smashed in the same area. And Spate was running like he was going to run.
If I'm his coach and he comes to me and says, look, I thought he was going to throw it to Perry because he's wide open behind
Fair
me.
Enough, and that's but in that case, block a dude. And that was he kind of, I mean, both of them ended up getting stuck in no man's land there, and it's kind of representative of Michigan's passing game right now. Yeah. I don't want to put that all on Spate. I don't want to put that all on Crawford, but they both screwed up.
I know, and it's – Ryan called it like a very football play here.
Yes.
And it was – I mean, this guy's supposed to be – he wasn't doing these kinds of things last year. And, you know, last year that same play, I think he was running in against Maryland and jumping over, and we got a – T-shirt we weren't allowed to make.
Or hopefully just throwing to the wide-open Grand Perry in the back of the end zone.
I think
that would have been preferable.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he is not taking all the opportunities that have been given to him. He's been erratic when he does have open receivers, and his receivers haven't been helping him out. It is, unfortunately, been kind of a death by a thousand cuts passing offense right now for Michigan. And that, I mean, we'll get to this more looking ahead, but... Mm-hmm. I think it'd be easier if it was just kind of one glaring thing that was standing out, and instead, especially now that you add Tariq Black's injury on top of everything, you have receivers that can't fully be trusted yet, a quarterback who's been a little erratic, an offensive line, especially a right tackle spot, that's giving up a fair amount of pressure. None of those things are killers on their own, but when they're all combined together, you get a passing offense that looks like this.
And when he's expecting it, I think a lot of it's he's, you know, throwing off the wrong foot because he's expecting to get hit out that side even when it's not coming.
Yeah, his mechanics do tend to break down in front of pressure, and now he's sometimes feeling pressure that isn't necessarily there.
Now, which, I did find a silver
lining. We've
seen
that happen to quarterbacks before. We're just conservative.
I did find a silver lining.
I would love to hear it.
Okay, I went back to last year's UFRs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and the Penn State game, he had 8 inaccurates.
That's not great.
That's not great at all. No, but listen to me. That was like early in the season, and that was kind of like it started the question. Okay, is this guy just inaccurate? Is this guy like a less accurate John Navarre?
And then after the bye week is when things clicked.
Exactly.
Michigan does have a bye week coming up after the Purdue game. However, they must get through the Purdue game first. They're probably going to need Spate's arm.
And Purdue is going to break down a little bit if he has some easy throws and the running game can get established a little bit in this one. They might be able to skate through again against a bad team, or a improved bad team. We'll get to Purdue later.
Yeah, we are getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. We should talk about the running game a little bit. As was noted in the UFR, this has become a base inside zone team, which is a huge difference from what they were the first 2 years under Harbaugh. This is obviously the influence of Greg Fry, who Michigan brought over as an offensive line coach from Indiana last year. Indiana, of course, was a great zone running team under Greg Fry. And Michigan, I guess they're a base inside zone and crack sweep team now, because the crack sweeps have really been what's working for them, to the point where they've actually been able to establish some counters because other teams are overplaying it.
You need something to counter off inside zone, right? You can't just run inside. It's just an inside run. So you could use outside zone, which most zone teams use, because it's not that dissimilar. But you could do it with a crack sweep.
Yes.
And since the crack sweep works for them, and, you know, that's they just show the look. They just get in the look that they have.
Yeah, they just put those trips receivers out there, bring a guy cracking down.
And our four slants in, and,
And we actually saw in the Air Force game, by the end, Michigan got a big run on a counter to the crack sweep because Air Force's defensive end jumped so far out that he just opened up the hole that the play was designed to go into.
Yeah.
So Michigan has, they're running inside zone all right. They're running the crack sweep pretty well. They managed to pull – Ty Isaacs should be touchdown on the worst holding call ever against Crawford.
Was
a power that was run as a constraint play, which is kind of crazy to say about a Jim Harbaugh team, but that opened up really nicely in large part because Air Force hadn't seen it all day.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is what I wrote my article this week, the next Sharpies this week on, was the games that Air Force was playing, because they came in with Bo's defense, which is all about, like, defensive linemen jumping into gaps that you don't expect them to be in.
Because they're tiny. They need to just shoot because they can't just stand there and fight off a block.
Right. So they do with defensive ends what we do with linebackers. And Harbaugh, I thought, had a great game plan against it. The running backs just kind of missed some of those holes that they created.
Yeah, we did see, I think for the third time in three games, unfortunately, Caron Higdon missed a yawning hole that the play was designed to cut back to.
Yes, fortunately it was only once, so it's not like,
three's a trend, and we saw it a little bit from him last year too.
What was terrible about that play is that the Air Force is slanting. Michigan catches them.
The play's designed to go in that hole.
The play's designed to hit, right. And you saw that play work earlier when Isaac hit it early in the game for a big run that should have been a touchdown. So, yeah, I think Morris is actually playing the gift for everybody right now. Or no, that's a...
That would be the power play. That's
the power play.
And the worst holding call ever. we are futzing with some GIF compatibility with our live stream if you happen to be watching us live. If you are listening to this afterwards, sorry. Check out my GIFs page on GiffyCat.
It's a very visual podcast.
It is a very visual podcast.
You probably should leave the GIFs up instead because you're covered by your computer and like they're just looking at my chest.
We do have the, you know, we can get the Holmes logo in there.
We can.
There we go.
There. There's Lantana's our other guy.
I think we've established at this point, Isaac is the clear-cut number one back. Chris Evans did get pulled for his fumble. It was an unfortunate fumble. It really turned the tide of the game since Air Force immediately went on a six-minute-long field goal drive afterwards. That just kind of set the tone for a really...
What was it, 24 yards?
In 12 plays. But I don't think the running back pecking order has really changed. Isaac's the lead dog. Yeah. Evans did get worked back in after the fumble a little bit after, you know, spending his requisite time on the bench learning his lesson.
True.
And Higdon, I mean, he's kind of established that he's kind of the 2B to Evans's 2A. And based on how often he's missing cuts, I think it's time to start thinking about him possibly more of a short yardage guy. Happen on a third and one.
I have a question for you.
Shoot.
Do you believe in the Ty Wheatley effect?
You know, not really.
Really?
I think running backs coaches are, for the most part, running backs coaches, at least when it comes to... generally speaking, there's a reason why those guys are just your most enthusiastic recruiter. I'll put it that way.
I agree. Okay, I agree that there's other positions that are probably more effective for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Ty Wheatley broke the mold by being such a good running backs coach, because we saw an immediate improvement in these guys, and we didn't see some of these mistakes last year, which are play call mistakes, right?
I mean, I'm still seeing enough of the mistakes where I'm not sure. I saw them last year, too.
All right.
I'm not willing to put a ton of stock into the running backs coaching is what is the problem with this run game now.
No, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going there at all.
Especially since we've seen, I think Wheatley was the reason that Isaac was buried. And Isaac, I don't think, should have been buried based on what we've seen so far this year.
Well, he did fumble. I mean, those are the rules.
But, I mean,
yeah,
we've seen enough of him to know that I think Michigan's had something kind of buried there for a little bit that they could have used a little bit more. Especially since Davion Smith was not exactly a game breaker last year, but we're getting into redux of old stuff.
Right.
Moving on to the tight end group.
Wait, don't go to the tight ends yet.
Are you telling me how to host this show? I'm not going to listen to you.
I produce this show. I have my sponsors.
Seth, shut up. We're talking about the tight ends.
Right.
It looks like Zach Gentry and Sean McKeon have very clearly passed Ian Bunting, who, when he even got in against Air Force, was relatively ineffective. And this seems like we didn't see Ty Wheatley because he was dinged up, but there is a very clear change in the pecking order where McKeon is playing more in line than Bunting is, and Gentry is getting that flex spot and even some in line snaps. So.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see. I mean, Bunting was supposed to be the experienced guy. He's very clearly fallen off, but it does seem like he's making a lot of mistakes in the blocking game, and Zach Gentry gives you a lot of upside in that passing game.
He does. Well, Bunting is supposed to be the tall guy. He's the flex guy who can block just well enough, you know, your Jake Butt. And if he's not going to do that, if he's not going to be as flexy as Zach Gentry, and he's not going to be as kind of both as McKeon, Whatever. Anyway, I don't know how he plays because these guys are younger. They're going to have more upside.
That the window is closing quickly for Bunting, it looks like, and that it only closes quicker if and when Wheatley returns from whatever ding kept him out on Saturday. And then on the offensive line, there's still the pass protection issues with Elizio. But generally, it was a pretty good day blocking for the run. It's obscured somewhat because Air Force just goes so gung-ho for killing the run. Their safeties are playing at 7 yards deep and moving forward at the snap. So you have these plays that are blocked well that still get tackled after 3 and 4 yards. But you go, you look at the UFR chart. Mason Cole had a solid game. Ben Bradison had a solid game. Patrick Kugler's issues were mainly picking up blitzes, but on straightforward stuff, he was better. Onwenu was off to a really good start, and then on the last drive where maybe he wasn't quite as locked in, he had a couple of minus twos and then got pulled for John Runyon Jr. I would not read too much into that.
No, people
other
on Twitter were saying, like, oh, is Runyon going to start now? No.
That is a lesson learned for Mike Onwenu to just, you know, stay locked in even if you think that last drive maybe doesn't mean so much. And Nolan Elizio was decent blocking for the run. The problem is in pass protection for him.
Yeah, and it's not like it was something we knew before going into the season. It's not like something that's going to fix itself overnight. So it's just kind of what they have to live with now. I don't want to dog on that guy.
Yeah,
because
I mean, Spate's going to have to deal with some pressure in his face. Hopefully, you know, they are young on that right side. They should continue to improve at picking up the twists and stunts and blitzes that they were having trouble with in the first couple
of
games.
Air Force is hard, too. They've got safeties coming down. They change up their looks a whole bunch, and they time it well, too.
Yeah, that is a difficult team to play for young linemen and quarterbacks who aren't comfortable with the passing game. We've seen, you know, a big thing coming out of this game was the play calling, and I do think Michigan was a little conservative. They didn't take some of the shots up the seam, the shots downfield that you want to take against a team that's playing so balls out against the run like Air Force was. And we also saw some issues. Both Wilton Spate and Jim Harbaugh really praised Air Force's ability to disguise their coverages, disguise their blitzes, and make late shifts and adjustments. We saw that most noticeably on the Ty Isaac goal line run where a defensive back shifts down to blitz right as Spate has turned his head away from that spot and is looking for the snap. And he thumps Isaac pretty much as soon as Isaac gets the handoff. So we've seen some issues where conservative play calling comes into effect a little bit. Pre-snap reads come into effect a little bit. And again, we get back to kind of it's not just one thing that's affecting this offense right now. There are a lot of little things that they need to fix up. Purdue should help on that front. They are not as crazy aggressive as Air Force. While playing with a similar talent level, it should be a little bit easier to game plan for. But kind of ready to see this team open it up a little bit.
Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't go deep a couple times in this game. And I know Brian mentioned this in UFR too, and I don't know if there's an answer for that. The only thing I could possibly think it was is Air Force was backing off after starting low.
Yeah.
So maybe that was like they knew something about how Michigan makes their reads. So.
Yeah. There's fair criticism to go around, I think, at this point. Air Force was a disappointing performance, not getting a touchdown until garbage time was not ideal. But we'll see. I mean, they get another chance this week against another subpar defense. We'll get into that a little bit. But before that, we're going to talk about the defense coming up after this break.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
All right, we are back with a much more encouraging segment.
Yes.
Going over the defense's performance against Air Force. It was a little frustrating only because of the offense's inability to put up points on the board, but the defense was once again rather dominant, save for one play, and against Air Force, you're going to get hit with a play. That's just how it works.
But Michigan, any coach in football would take one breakdown,
yes,
against Air Force.
And Michigan holds Air Force to only 232 yards of total offense, 4 yards per play. Take out that 64-yard pass, and they don't complete a single pass. So that's not bad, even against an Air Force team that is obviously looking to run. Michigan was able to eventually knock them off schedule, dominate up front. And once Air Force had to try to put the ball up in the air in the second half, it turned into a real bloody, bloody outing there. So we will start, as we normally do, with the defensive line. This is the one place where there are things that you can maybe take away from this game. Otherwise, yeah, there's not going to be much from this that's really applicable to the season going forward. But how your defensive line performs against a triple option team can be somewhat telling. And Michigan came through tremendously well in this game. And somewhat surprisingly, compared to preseason expectations, not surprisingly considering what we've seen so far this season, Chase Winovich was the best player on the field.
Yeah. I know I was bugging you about putting a shield on him in the FFF this week, and you're like, oh, I get one.
The NFL draft type hasn't come quite yet, but he is playing at that, like, we might start having to talk about first team All Big Ten.
I might have to start calling NFL draft nicks and being like, watch this guy.
Yeah, you want to check this dude out. And what was really impressive about this game, and this is something we've seen so far this season, it has been a very pleasant surprise. We've talked about it before. He is not just a Jake Ryan speed guy off of the edge. He is able to take on blockers at 260 pounds and move them.
Yes. Michigan plays kind of a balanced line, so he's really, any given play, he's doing the same exact thing that Gary is.
Yes.
And he's doing it just as well as Rashawn
Gary.
He's
getting that same level of movement. We have a GIF playing right now of him blowing up an option play where he just moves a blocker back 2 yards to the backfield, sheds him, and then makes a tackle himself. It is outrageously impressive. He ended up with an almost unheard of plus 19.5 in the UFR.
Against an option team. Against a team designed to make those guys look like fools.
Yeah, the team that's like, their whole thing is making you screw up. He did not screw up. He was on fire all afternoon. So was Mo Hurst, even though he didn't rack up any stats.
So was Mo Hurst. It's just like the addendum to every single one of these defensive linemen.
As Brian mentioned in the game column and in the UFR, it's getting boring to talk about Mo Hurst because we know what he's going to do. He's going to knife pass guys and just completely blow up plays on a regular basis. And he, for Air Force, the dive was just not an option because of Mo Hurst.
Yeah, we should start doing like a Mo Hurst boring play of the week or something like that to kind of just to highlight a little bit of the things that he's doing out there. Because this one, again, there were a couple times where they Air Force just had to tackle him because like, there was there was no way they could stop him in the middle of their off. And later on in the game, he was really he was coming out, which is, this guy is starting at nose all game.
Yeah.
And then in the fourth quarter, he's still shutting them down. So,
yeah, conditioning not a concern with Mo Hurst, it seems. To be able to hold up like that with very little rotation throughout most of the game, we did see a nice pass rush move from Aubrey Solomon late. But other than that, it was pretty much all Hurst. They had a couple snaps playing in a 4-3. Brian Marnay looked quite good on those two snaps. But they really are using that solely as a changeup right now. That might change as Michigan sees some other offenses because obviously this the 3-3-5 was perfectly cut out for this game. This game was a little quiet for Rashawn Gary, but that was mostly because Air Force picked their poison. They picked Chase Winovich and ended up doubling Gary most of the afternoon. And when they weren't doubling him, they were usually running away from him.
I'm fine with that. If they just want to play, the team just want to like, yeah, well, we're going to double up Gary and let Winovich run at us all game.
That's a choice I'm okay with opponents making.
Yeah,
we'll still got a spectacular Gary play when he nearly beheaded Arian Werthmann. I'm still not sure whether that was an attempted pitch or a fumble. I think it was kind of in between.
That was Rashawn Gary's coming for me.
Yeah.
Here, someone else take this.
Just get this away so I don't die. I think we'll start seeing Gary pick up some more traditional statistics soon, but the quiet counting stat so far should not be something that worries people. He's still been dominant.
He has been dominant. I'm waiting for people to start like getting on him and like, where's our five star? How come he doesn't have 20 sacks at this point?
I mean, thankfully the defensive performance as a whole has kind of quieted any sort of individual concerns with the defense for the most part. And I would say a very, very large part of that is the play of Devin Bush, who was once again absolutely spectacular at middle linebacker.
Yes, I think on my notes I wrote Devin Bush, and then like the rest of the line, I'd fit in as many exclamation marks as I could.
Yeah.
He's been amazing this year.
Yeah, I mean, this was a game that fit well with his style, obviously, because he's a guy who's extremely comfortable lining up about 5 to 7 yards behind the nose tackle and just tracking plays sideline to sideline. So, but what he did in this game, as impressive as his ability to get to the play, was his ability to fight through traffic to get there. He is not always working through clean, even with this defensive line, because Michigan only has three defensive linemen out there. He has to work through some blockers. He's been doing that exceptionally well.
As a true sophomore, it's not like he hasn't seen everything before. He's never seen this offense before,
and
he knows where the blocks are coming and knows how to get around them.
And we're seeing that. We saw him learn on the fly, where he took a bad angle on a run play, gave up the edge, and then next time Air Force shows that look, he's taking the correct angle, knows where the blocker's coming from, getting out there to get the tackle. So he is fixing his mistakes, really, as we're watching him play, and there aren't that many of them to begin with. So he has been, he's playing at an All-Big Ten level right now. And Mike McCray needs to be talked about after, an ugly performance against Cincinnati. Yeah,
this was his jam.
Yeah, this really fits in with his strength. he had a tremendous shed and tackle in the backfield on his own. That really was one of the standout plays on an afternoon where there were a lot of them on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously was not tested in coverage. We did not see that part of his game, which after the Cincinnati game, I think we're fine with. Against the run, he wasn't getting edged. He was getting out there, and he was making a lot of impressive plays.
Yeah, he's got to be the kind of guy that Air Force, when they scout a team, they're like, oh, no, not one of these guys again. Because he can move really fast in a straight line forward.
Yes.
And that means that he's bringing, with his weight's not small to begin with, so he's bringing a load. And a lot of times in this game, when he didn't rack up stacks, he was going into his blocker, which is what you have to do. You have to be very aggressive against this if you're a weak side or an outside linebacker. Which kind of leads us into Kalik Hudson, too.
Yes, and he was sometimes a little bit too aggressive or not aggressive enough on the edge.
Yeah.
He had a couple plays where he got edged, but for the most part, relatively solid.
Your Twitter handle is Hitman.
Yeah.
Go get it, Kalik.
But, I mean, the really encouraging thing about him on this game was his coverage.
True.
Because he was one guy who was actually tested a few times. And while his interception came against the backup quarterback on a Chuck and Pray situation, he had absolutely earned that one.
Yeah.
He would have had an interception on Worthman earlier in the game, undercutting a route, except Worthman threw it behind both the receiver and Hudson.
And another defender, too, I think.
So, a slightly better bad idea throw, yeah. And Hudson already has a pick in that game. Had another really impressive pass breakup where he tips the ball into the air and gives other defensive backs a chance to rally. Unfortunately, it still hit the ground. But he and Brandon Watson were really the only guys who got tested at all in coverage. Watson passed again with flying colors, so that is another data point to him where he has really come through as a solid cover guy.
Air Force is picking their spots, so they're seeing these are the two guys that looked quasi-beatable to them, which means they didn't think the freshmen were, or the sophomores.
Yeah, and I mean, also part of it is just that they only attempt 9 passes all game. I don't want to take too much out of that in terms of coverage.
I think
other than
Air
there
Force
weren't
is,
any busts.
Yeah, well,
other than the big one, which was a major bust by Josh Metellus and Tyreek Cannell. Cannell gets faked out, kind of takes a step to the outside, reading run first, gets beat on a slant, and Metellus, who is supposed to have deep middle, is also reading run and then bugs out for.
So we had a little fan theory in the stands watching that, because right before that, we were pointing at the play right before that. Hurst got held. They kind of tackled Hurst. He was about to blow it up. So it was a 3rd and 4, and then which happens. You know, you get held, but both those safeties saw it, and they're both like a little bit kind of yapping at the refs a little bit before that. Then they line up and they pick their guys. But I think maybe they weren't as aligned or had everything in mind that one play.
I don't know. That looked like a pretty serious just flat bust.
Yeah.
We did have some encouraging signs from the secondary, even on a day where they were not really tested, and that was in run support. LeVert Hill had a couple really impressive plays making tackles on the edge. David Long also had an impressive play where he lines up as a quasi-linebacker, flows inside out and makes a tackle where he doesn't really need any help, even though the help arrives. And considering, especially with LeVert Hill, that was a serious question mark coming out of high school for them to hold their own against a team that's going to test them more in the run game than anybody else. Very positive sign going forward when you're going to run into teams like Ohio State that's going to test those guys again.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are not – they're both 5'11", under 200, so they're not going to be big blow-you-up. They're not Marlon Jacksons out there. And I mean, to see them being able to get off blocks, be able to hold the edge like that against teams that really do attack the edge, that was very encouraging for them.
So we're going to move on from the defense because there is really not much to learn about this game except we set a lot of practice time on fire learning how to defend the option, and they're good at it. But unless Georgia Tech makes the playoff or something like that.
One less thing Urban Meyer can, like, surprise us
with. Yeah, we're not going to really see a lot of this stuff again. We do still have some quick special team stuff. Donovan Peoples-Jones had a pretty nice bounce-back day as the punt returner. There are no more calls for him to not be that dude. There are now calls for him to also be returning kickoffs.
Which I agree with, by the way.
Yeah, I think we are on board with that so long as he can handle all the stuff getting thrown his way. But you kind of figure kickoff returns is a relatively simple concept even for a true freshman to pick up.
Right.
He did those at Cass Tech. It's not a foreign concept to him. And Kekoa Crawford has not been super impressive on those kickoff returns either. So
yeah,
it seems like it'd be nice to work in Donovan Peoples-Jones there. But at the very least, they have what now is quite clearly an extremely dangerous punt returner who also cleaned up his issues with pointing out ducks. He got the gunners cleared out
about it.
On Air Force's bad punt. He had a clean, fair catch, a couple of them, I believe, in fact. Jim Harbaugh said after the Cincinnati game, you know, this is a guy who doesn't repeat mistakes.
Right.
He did not repeat his mistakes.
I hope that continues the rest of his career. As long as he's here, he's, like, screaming whenever there's a punt coming.
If his Cass Tech career is any indication, I think that will be the case. And then we also have kickoffs were nice.
Yeah.
Michigan was really they have not Doug Fogue. James Fogue.
James Fogue.
Should be Doug. Should be Doug. He's got the capability to boom into the back of the end zone, and so now Michigan has reached the point where they're trying to knock him up a little bit higher, get him down to right around the goal line and force a tough return decision. They buried Air Force at the 15 on one of those. And it's nice to see a kickoff man who has that capability. It's something where Michigan might be able to get themselves 5-10 yards of field position on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm worried that it might come back and bite them one time. But, you know, I don't think Michigan has really started. They've been starting behind the 25 almost every single
play. Yeah, and I assume they would be more judicious about how they when they pull out the short kickoffs if they are facing a more dangerous returner.
Right, let Paris Campbell just stay there in
Air
the
Force
end zone.
Didn't really have somebody to be frightened of, so. Yeah,
I did write down that Fugue deserves an FFF star. I don't know
we don't have a kickoff man yet.
No, but maybe we can squeeze him on the chart there somewhere just to, just and then, to recognize.
Lastly, the one part of the special teams that is still a little bit iffy right now. Oh, first of all, I should mention Quinn Nordine hit a lot of field goals.
He did.
He's good.
He did.
We're done. Quinn Nordine, good at football.
Can I add one thing to that?
Fine.
They had a little run which got them within 40 to 49 instead of 50.
I appreciated that greatly.
The Wild Thing bet is still
it's still active. I am now just like instinctively rubbing the hair behind my ears. But the one thing about the special teams that's been a little bit concerning is the punts from Will Hart. He had another shank in this one. And I know Harbaugh mentioned that they're trying some directional punting stuff. But that's now three shanks. He has caught a hold of some and really given him a ride, but there's just a little bit of inconsistency there.
I don't know how your inner timing feels on this, but I feel like he's like getting him off slow too.
I haven't noticed that, to be honest, but I haven't been up there in the press box with the stopwatch. So.
Right. I'm
more concerned about the punts flying out of bounds 25 yards downfield.
That's concerning too. It wasn't that visible in this game because Michigan was kicking field goals at the end of every drive.
Yes, but there were not many punts in this game. Something to keep an eye on. We'll see how often that comes up against Purdue, but be nice if Hart started leveling these out a little bit so we're not a kind of the Will Hogger up like we expect you to shank one a game status.
Yeah.
But that's it with the special teams. We are going to take one more break, and we will be coming back with a gimmicky top five.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, welcome back to MGO Radio 3.3, live from Holmes Brewery on Jackson Avenue in Ann Arbor. When the boss is away, the minions will play. So our gimmicky top five for this week is the things we do when Brian is gone.
Oh, this is fun.
And we welcome in Rishi from Underground Printing.
Hey, guys.
So we will have three on this gimmicky top five. We will start with Seth. Seth, you're number five.
My number five is the thing that the readers have been clamoring for forever, a weekly Draftageddon update.
Absolutely. That'll get readership up in a hurry.
Yeah, we could have, like, you know, drafts afterwards, you know, like at a drop and add our teams, and we'll get Pro Football Focus to sponsor it.
Yes.
And then they'll score it for us, too, so we can actually have points every single week. People want this.
Rishi, you're number five.
My number five is a real basic one. We just bigger banner ads, you know, more ads.
Yeah.
More in ads. Your face. More calls to action, I think.
Get some pop-ups, maybe.
Pop-up video. The automatic videos, yes. is where it's at.
Those exactly going. Right.
Those CPMs are really high.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, my number five is a straightforward live ad read, which we will attempt in the next segment with our Lantana Hummus. So that one might actually come true. Seth, you're number four.
I'm never doing that. All right. Number four is Seth's weekly Red Wings rant.
You know, well, that's going to be depressing.
Now it is, yeah. But this was a thing between Brian and I for ages, because Brian grew up in Colorado during the Red Wings Abs rivalry.
Yes.
So, like,
that was a thing.
Yeah, if he's on a side, he's on the other side. He's on the wrong side. And I grew up a bit. I don't know if I grew up a Red Wings fan or if I'm a bandwagon fan, because they've been so good so long.
It's the same thing.
I guess I get to find out this year. Yeah. But I have a lot of Red Wings thoughts that I never get to share on the blog, probably because I shouldn't.
I mean, Brian used to post about the Pistons way back when, so that wouldn't be totally unprecedented.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
Rishi, you're number four.
Number four. This is courtesy of one Greg Dooley. I crowdsourced some of my answers. And plan a visit to Rodriguez Hill.
All right. A place we're all itching to go back to.
At least we can stop. All right.
My number four is commissioning a guest post from Spencer Hall entitled The Case Against Cheese. If Spencer hasn't already written that yet, I assume it's probably on EDSBS somewhere. But
I also believe MGO Cheese has retweeted us now.
Oh, yeah. That's almost inevitable.
Yep.
All right, Seth, you're number three.
I want to change intangibles in the previews to people who dress up as that week's opponent coach.
I kind of like that, actually. I was ready to hate it because I love the intangible cats.
Yeah, I'm not a cat guy, and it's been done. It was cool when it was a small blog, but now we have a great big readership, and we could get them to dress up as opponent coaches and take pictures of themselves. And I think that would be a wonderful feature and, you know, preview the game a little bit.
There is definitely some comedic potential there.
Yes, there is.
You're number three, Rishi.
My number three is when Brian is away, is to talk about Zingerman's and how it's a national treasure for Ann Arbor.
Delicious sandwiches.
Delicious sandwiches.
They pay their workers very well.
That's right. Yep. Absolutely. A staple of the business community. And actually, the number two most requested piece of information when calling the Convention and Visitors Bureau behind U of M Hospital. Where is U of M Hospital?
That
number
sounds
two,
about right.
Where is Zingerman's? So, we should talk about that.
Where is Zingerman's, Brian? I'm talking to you even though you're not here. My number three is quite simple. It is Ace's hockey blog. I don't think we need to discuss it further. We will move straight on to Seth's number two.
My number two is start fights with other sports writers.
Thing that is totally unprecedented in MGO blog history.
No, this used to be a feature. I don't know if that... I was a very early reader of MGO blog, and I used to love it. Every once in a while, he would just get really mad and take somebody down.
I'd almost put... have Stephen Godfrey guest to talk about all the ways that we slight the South, but I decided against putting that in there because you have covered it in a more broad term.
We could have, like, a weekly, you know, here's a thing we don't like about the South, to just to tweak him.
Might be asking for it there.
Yeah.
Rishi, your number two?
My number two would be to transform the podcast to a completely visual podcast a la YouTube. This is actually a real conversation.
Yes. That's what we're doing.
This is not a joke.
No.
Not really a joke. This is actually real.
This is a very serious
all request. All you're seeing right here is all I'm getting currently, but I'm working hard on it.
Yes.
We can talk about it more.
Yes.
We like to show our sponsors more than our faces, Rishi.
All right, my number two is MGO Oh My God Shirtless Week, where all posts feature a photo of me shirtless. And, yeah, once again, I don't really need to explain this one, so we'll go right to Seth for Seth, your number one.
My number one is I would start my own Drupal website.
Yes, you would.
I get asked to do that all the time. I want the readers, or listeners, I guess, to understand what we go through. When that comes up, we have to track down Brian. He's the only person in the world who can fix that. So I have, like, the Hewl people are, like, texting me and calling me, hey, did you see it's down? We have an automatic message. And Brian,
we're all getting people are up in our ats.
Yeah. Everybody in the world is telling us, and Brian is like in some sort of like cave writing you afar, and has no. So I'm just gonna start my own next time.
All right, Rishi, you're number one.
My number one was going to be something great, but we vetoed it because we just felt it was too scorching.
It was too good.
It was actually too good.
So the takes cannot go over 460 degrees.
That's right. Yeah. So my number one is carte blanche on t-shirt design because they've recently been going to committee and we just don't see as much.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
Carte blanche on t-shirt design.
All right. My number one is if you've been listening to the podcast for long, you should probably have guessed this. It's a gimmicky top five, the five best jokes in Happy Gilmore. Well, Brian would probably not participate because he does not believe there are jokes in that movie.
Well, we'll do a watch party.
I strenuously disagree.
Since Brian's,
we could do a live podcast watch party, do the gimmicky top five afterwards, maybe do a whole episode.
Will UFR it afterwards?
Maybe an entire longer extended episode just devoted to Adam Sandler's entire career.
FFFF Adam Sandler. But, we kind of did that with Cincinnati already.
But now that we're all fired, except for Rishi. Rishi's not fired.
Brian doesn't listen to podcasts. We're okay.
We will be going to one more commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be previewing tomorrow's game against Purdue.
Let's eat some hummus.
Staying in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place.
It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 3.3, recorded live in front of a happy hour audience at Holmes Brewery on Jackson Avenue in Ann Arbor. It is time to fulfill number five on my gimmicky top five from the previous segment. It is Lantana Hummus time.
Are we going to do number three first? I want the shirtless ace.
The headset's getting in the way right now.
Yeah, all right. We'll go right on to the hummus. This is good hummus, by the way.
Yeah, we have... For today, the spicy yellow lentil hummus, which was a hit last week and is a hit again today. I already had some over the break. It is topped with sunflower seeds and apricots. It is delicious.
And this has actually become the number one. We buy this stuff all the time at my house. And this is past the carrot now as the number one purchase because my wife cooks with it.
It's really good.
Yeah. She makes like a...
I'm resisting the temptation to continue eating it while we are doing this segment.
All right. I do have to point out something about this, though.
We have a real ad read, for one.
Oh, we do, yes.
And for two, yes, we have an important point to make about the certain ingredients or ingredients that are not.
We have. They're not made of cats. But
that is the most important thing. Not made of kittens,
not, still
like
not
their
made
competitors.
Of kittens. And, right, but it's also not made of chickpeas.
Which is also unlike their competitors.
Yes. They found that beans tend to taste better. Beans are still, you know, you can make a hummus out of lots of things. And so they make them out of different beans that taste. But for example, the black bean is made out of black beans.
What do you know? And yeah. That might
and
be why
lentils.
They taste better than all the other hummuses.
Exactly. And they
Humichin.
it's Semitic, so humichin. I'm guessing, yeah. Anyway, that's why it works so well, is like spreads, and you can cook with it and stuff like that, too, because it's not just chickpeas. It's pretty good stuff.
All right, Seth, hit us with that ad read. Straightforward.
Oh, I first tried this stuff when Matt Gay sent me a refrigerated sampler of five flavors, set them out at my mother-in-law's for a family event, and we killed the carrot immediately. My wife's cousin actually then brought the lentil to the table and was, like, dipping his food in it. So, anyway, it's available at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, and I get mine from Johnny Pomodoro's near my house.
All right. Lantana Hummus.
Lantana Hummus.
I hope you're pleased.
I am very pleased. I hope the advertiser's pleased, because... I hope they keep on sending us this fantastic hummus.
Yeah, it is delicious. Yeah. And now we move on to tomorrow afternoon's game at Purdue, which has gone from what was expected to be a walkover heading into the season to a game that is making some people nervous and not without good reason.
Well, Purdue is about 10 times more likely to win than they were at the beginning of the season.
Yes.
But they were 2.5% likely to win at the beginning of the season. So,
you know, expectations have changed. That does not necessarily mean that... that Purdue is a huge upset threat. I mean, I've seen they've become a very trendy pick.
Yeah.
And it's understandable given how Michigan's offense has looked.
But Michigan fans are upset that we're not killing bad teams as easily as we should be. And, you know, Purdue fans have been in the worst possible places that we've never been.
Yeah, yeah. So Purdue, I mean, their fan base, very energized by this, and they should be because... this has gone from a completely moribund program to a really, really outrageously fun team to watch. I have actually watched the entirety of two Purdue games this year and bits of a third. I couldn't bring myself to watch the whole Missouri game because Mizzou has entirely checked out of this season and was kind of bad to begin with. But Louisville, that was the game I focused on for the film post. Wasn't the perfect game to look at from a scheme standpoint because they were playing against Lamar Jackson. Michigan obviously does not have a Lamar Jackson or anything that resembles a Lamar Jackson. So we might see some different things from Purdue on the defensive side of the ball. Offense should be pretty similar, though. And
by similar, you mean it means...
Oh, I mean, similar to what we saw them do against Louisville, not similar to anything we saw them do the last several years.
Anything that's ever existed on the planet before.
Jeff Brohm was ported over from Western Kentucky.
You recall he gave Alabama a hard time while he was there.
He is from the Bobby Petrino coaching tree. Petrino has been a very excellent offensive coach at every stop he's been at. The offense, it is very spread. They run a lot of run-pass options. They have a lot of misdirection. They run a lot more trick plays and gadget plays than the normal team does. I think I've seen three or four different variations on the flea flicker over the course of two games, including the spectacular Tecmo Bowl double flea flicker pass that scored a touchdown against Ohio.
And the fake one in the spring game.
Yes, they do have a fake one on tape. We're going to see some weird stuff from them. But they have also some very advanced NFL passing concepts.
They do a lot of verts.
That has been incorporated in. A lot of verts, a lot of switch routes, a lot of things that are designed to mess with straight-up man press coverage and also cause defenders to bust switching zones. The problem for them right now, they have this beautifully schemed offense. The personnel is still produced. And Daryl Hazel's recruiting in his tenure was, in a word, terrible. So right now, Purdue is operating with two quarterbacks, neither of whom they can totally trust right now. David Blau is a starter who was holding over from last year. 21 interceptions last year, so he did not enter the season as a starter. Elijah Sindelar.
Unlike those Maryland quarterbacks, so there's a reason why he's throwing those.
Elijah Sindelar started game one against Louisville, although Blau ended up getting more snaps in that game, getting more throws. They did play about an even timeshare. Blau threw two picks in that game, and they were two bad, bad, bad picks. So he gets pulled in the middle of that game. They ride Sindelar to try to come back late in the second half against Louisville. Sindelar has a much bigger arm than Blau, but is not as accurate, which is a weird thing to say about a guy who threw 21 interceptions last year. So there's still Blau has, over the last two games, at least not thrown any interceptions, but he plays with fire a lot. He throws, especially when he throws the ball to the outside. He does not have the arm strength to do that unless he's really anticipating those throws, and he doesn't always do that. So he's a guy who seems liable to throw a pick six and maybe turn the ball over one or two more times at that. Purdue has kind of been riding with him because he hasn't turned the ball over the last two games. He does know the offense and move the ball better than Sindelar at this point. He's also prone to making bigger mistakes and taking more sacks, which against Michigan does not seem like a recipe for success. Well,
I kind of liken them to Crazy Sheridan and Threat. Because
that's rough. That's mean to Purdue right now. They're better than that.
Well, all right, so Blau is he doesn't have great arm strength. And a lot of his picks come because he sees a hole, and he thinks he can hit it because he's Brett Favre, and he's not Brett Favre.
No, he's Alex Hornibrook.
Yeah.
Right-handed. So the passing game, and the other thing that is holding the passing game back is their outside receivers. They started off the game against Ohio with just a comical series of drop passes that stymied, I think, their first two drives. They had a couple drops in the Louisville game. And more noticeable than that was just the general lack of separation that their outside receivers are getting and the lack of looks that they were getting from the quarterbacks. When they have to throw, they are focusing on their tight ends. Cole Herdman has been very productive so far, as has their second tight end, Bryson Hopkins, is actually their second leading receiver ahead of Herdman.
Now, did you watch enough of the Mizzou game to see his two horrible drops?
I did not see Hopkins' drops. I did see one against Louisville, so Herdman is the guy with the surer hands and also runs routes like a receiver. He's a good player. They're both kind of flex tight end types. They both weigh 240 pounds. If they get lined up over a strong side end, they're going to get moved. But as threats in the passing game, they are solid route runners. They are big targets. They're the guys that both Blau and Sindelar tend to look to first. And the other, especially since they run a ton of RPOs, a lot of run-pass options, and the tight ends are the guys who tend to kind of pop open over the middle on those type of plays. So they get utilized a lot in this offense. There's going to be some stress on the safeties in this game. And that's also because Danny Anthrop has been successfully cloned. They claim that there is a redshirt freshman named Jackson Anthrop.
Jackson, we're putting that in quote marks.
I don't believe it. He's the same size, he wears the same number, and appears to be just as obnoxious and good as Danny Anthrop was.
Have you seen Danny Anthrop around anywhere?
I have not, I think he's down there. Got a fresh shave, pretending to be a few years younger. But if you don't remember him, Danny Anthrop is a very productive slot receiver, undersized, but had an impressive array of skills where they would use him on jet sweeps. They would use him on downfield passes when they would go down there. Jackson Anthrop against Louisville had two touchdown catches, one on a nicely run route that on a switch route that Louisville then blew the coverage on, but he did a nice toe tap in the corner of the end zone to convert it. And then the second one was a really impressive snag on a throw into a very tight window between two defenders where he had to kind of wrest it away from a defender. He had a couple more impressive catches where you can tell this guy has extremely strong hands. He's going to be very reliable. And you can tell that even though he's just a redshirt freshman, the quarterbacks trust him more than any other receiver. When Purdue was driving late on their last gasp drive, it was Anthrop who converted two fourth downs. And the second one was a throw where Sindelar just put it on him, even though there was a defensive back draped all over him. He managed just to wrestle it away from the guy. I was really impressed by him, and he's going to test. I mean, we haven't really seen a dynamic slot threat yet.
That's true.
Because Florida was suspended, and then Michigan played Cincinnati and Air Force. I don't even know if Air Force has a slot receiver. They have A-backs. Anthrop will be a test, which is, you know, weird to see from a redshirt freshman 5'11 slot guy. You don't expect that dude to be an instant impact guy, but he looks good.
Yeah, well, I wanted to compare him to Gallon, but instead of, like, Gallon's, you know, jumping way up in the air, he can body guys. Like, he can body dudes like he's a 6'4", 240 dude, and, you know, that's come out in every single game we watched of him. So that's going to be something that's going to test the physicality of the safeties. You know, Metalist is going to see where he stands finally against some of these guys.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll see Khalik Hudson tested in coverage as well. Performed quite well, as we mentioned earlier, against Air Force in that regard.
Yeah.
So far, so good. This will probably be the biggest test they face so far, just based on the tight ends and slot receiver that will be operating over the middle for Purdue. The big thing for Michigan against the passing game is going to be just not busting, because the scheme is what really opens things up for Purdue right now. And in that regard, they use, as we mentioned, a lot of RPOs, a ton of misdirections. They ran, as I highlighted in the film post this week, a play-action RPO with the first read being a wheel route throwback to the running back. And when that was covered, they still had a check-down throwback drag route to the tight end.
Yep.
I haven't seen that before.
I had to draw it up. I had to draw it up because I was
Rahm
like...
Rahm has come up with just some really fascinating stuff. So this is going to be... You know, if I was an impartial fan here, I would be really excited to see the battle of wits between Brahm and Dom Brown, how those guys try to counter each other. I'm not even going to try to predict how Michigan is going to come out against Purdue because I am not Don Brown. I did not predict the 3-3-5 being the base defense heading into the season. I'm not going to attempt to predict this. And we'll see also on the ground, Purdue has had sophomore running back Tario Fuller emerge over the last couple games.
He's good, too.
As a threat, a productive guy, and he's kind of broken through what had been a somewhat underwhelming collection of backs that they were using as a committee. That said, he broke out against Ohio and a Mizzou team that fired their defensive coordinator heading into that game. So we don't yet really have an idea. And also, Louisville's defense is not very good. That's the other thing that I didn't mention in the film post. Should be mentioned here. Clemson's quite good. So this isn't the fairest comparison, but Clemson tore them to shreds.
Okay.
They have not been a good defense so far this year. They were not a great defense last year. They lean very hard on Lamar Jackson, both as an offense and as a team on the whole. But they're not particularly impressive up front. They, in fact, have a redshirt freshman left tackle who I had already picked out as a bit of a sore spot watching film. And he is questionable for this game and will probably be limited if he plays.
So his backup.
and whoever's backing up the redshirt freshman left tackle for Purdue, I presume is not going to be good at blocking Chase Winovich.
Yeah.
That is my guess. I also was not particularly impressed with their right tackle, who got beat flat out on two speed rushes in this game. So we'll see. I expect Michigan's defensive line and blitzing linebackers to rack up some numbers in this game. Not only because Purdue's line is a little bit iffy, but especially if they go with Blau as the quarterback. Blau is a guy with a tendency to hold on to the ball for a long time and also a tendency to try to escape out the pocket from the backside. And as we learned from watching the John O'Korn experience against Indiana last year, that is a terrible idea, even when you're playing Madden. Maybe especially when you're playing Madden, but also in real football.
Especially against this Michigan defensive
line.
Yeah,
especially if Rashawn Gary and Chase Winovich and Devin Bush are the guys pursuing you. You really don't want to do that. I expect Blau to take some sacks. I expect Blau to have some very hurried throwaways where he realizes that Devin Bush is much faster than he expected, kind of like what we saw with Arian Werthen last week.
Yeah, they kind of have to go with Blau in this one, right? The upside there is their chance of winning.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably have to ride or die with him because Sindelar is simply too inaccurate to really pilot that offense consistently throughout an entire game. So we'll see what happens with him, but I expect them to ride with Blau as much as they can. We'll see what they can do with the running game. They really didn't try to establish it much against Louisville. So we'll see what happens with that. But I expect Michigan to be able to shut these guys down.
Yeah, I mean, two things struck me. I think they're going to go with kind of a Maryland, like that game last year against Maryland where they were kind of hiding their offensive linemen a bit and they were hiding their the receivers a bit and just kind of stacking them up to get that space, let the running backs and let the tight end, everybody, let get some guys moving around in space. I think that we can match up with them physically as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, we will probably see Mike McCray's edge defense will be quite relevant once again because Purdue, they will run a lot of outside zone.
Yeah.
The outside zone blocking scheme tends to be the base for the run-pass option plays. So there will
it's like
be
super
some
spread off it, like
it's,
outside.
It's very sad spread, especially since they often will pair it with a pulling guard,
yeah.
Coming back the other way in case the quarterback pulls.
Let's have only four offensive linemen in this. Get everybody out of there.
It is extremely spread, but with their ability to pop receivers open in the intermediate and deep levels of the field, they can mess with assignments. They can break some plays, even though their blocking up front isn't necessarily that great. There is one matchup up front that I am intrigued by. Purdue does have a pretty solid center in Kirk Barron. He impressed me against Louisville. However, he has not seen anybody who's like Mo Hurst yet.
Yeah. That was one of the takes. Louisville doesn't have great defensive tackles, so I kind of wanted to see him against somebody besides that, Ohio, and Mizzou.
And Barron was a guy who showed up on some preseason All-Big Ten lists. I think he's a legit player, but this will certainly be a big test for him. I'm flipping over to the other side of the ball. I mean, you know, kind of sum it up. On the offensive side, Michigan, this comes down to not getting RPS'd.
Yeah. One thing I actually
wanted to... And not blowing big plays.
One thing I wanted to mention is that, like, maybe Air Force a little bit helps them because it's assignment football.
Certainly in terms of, preparation of you need to stick with your man and stick with your lane.
And stay in that mindset.
Trust the rest of your defense and know that there's going to be a lot that's in front of you that is trying to get you to move in the wrong place. So
right. In
that sense, I mean, these two offenses could not look more different in the way it plays out. But,
what they're trying to do with a defensive player's mind. So if Michigan was really good about playing their assignments except for the one boss, so they repeat that kind of mindset, make things hard on them.
Yeah, no, if they can have a relatively mistake-free performance again, they're going to be in line to win this game. Especially since flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Purdue is not
they're
great.
Purdue.
They were an awful defense last year, especially against the run. They have improved. They turned over that entire coaching staff, which they should have done. They brought in Nick Holt, who's from the Pete Carroll coaching tree. So, I think it was a product of playing Lamar Jackson that they played so much zone in that game against Louisville. He comes from a cover three background, so that is going to be a guy who is still quite comfortable calling those defenses, will have his defense playing in zone a fair amount. And I think that is a big opportunity for the receivers, the tight ends, and Wilton Spate, because Purdue looked very susceptible, especially up the middle of the field. They have two new safeties, one a JUCO transfer who is playing cornerback in junior college. That's not a great sign. And they have their middle linebacker is a 260-pound dude who looks like a defensive end. He's really good against the run, Juwan Bentley. But not getting a ton of depth on his zone drops because he's 260 pounds.
Yeah.
So there should be windows to throw into over the middle. I'd like one of their corners. DeJuan Hunt, I think, was all right, but he's only 5'9". So there are guys to pick on the outside, too. For Michigan, in the passing game, it'll simply be a matter of do they execute? It's a phrase I hate using after the Brady Hoke era, but this will simply be about – and The other thing to mention with the passing game is that Purdue has almost no pass rush to speak of. They have one sack on the season.
Really?
They have one. So
are they like a real 3-4?
They're lining up basically as a pure 3-4. They will show some kind of four-man front looks with a stand-up defensive end, kind of like how DJ Durkin's defense was designed with that buck linebacker. But for the most part, this is a pure 3-4. However, they do have some injury issues at this point. So they have mentioned, Brian mentioned in the preview, that they might have to shift some guys and play a 4-3 with Galen Robinson, the younger brother of Glenn Robinson, as a 280-pound outside linebacker, which means you're running a 4-3.
Yeah.
That's a defensive end. I don't care what you're trying to call it.
Is it Chukwu who's hurt or something? Or
No, they're... both of their inside linebackers, Bentley and McCollum, who transferred over from Western Kentucky, are a little dinged up. The injury status of both is relatively unclear, but if one of those guys goes out, they might change with their front, which says something about the depth on that defense.
Yeah.
If you're going to change your scheme because of one injury to your starters. But we'll see. This should be a team that Michigan can move. They either have... Lorenzo Neal, they do have a true nose tackle on Lorenzo Neal. I didn't think he was particularly impressive, even before he got very unjustly booted from the Louisville game for hitting Lamar Jackson in the chest. But Eddie Wilson, their backup nose, co-starter at the nose, who is splitting snaps and actually had a slight advantage in his favor even before Neal got kicked out, weighs 295 pounds, is much more of a one-gap guy. And when you're running a true 3-4, you need to be a two-gapper.
Yeah.
So they're light to be running that defense the way they run it. I think Michigan should be able to have more success in the traditional run game than Louisville did. And we'll see. Galen Robinson is an impressive player. He's an impressive run defender, at least. He still doesn't get much pass rush. But
should
I think
Michigan have recruited him, or do we have enough?
On this defensive line? No.
Yeah.
In a word, no.
Would he be, like, what, behind ahead of Lawrence Marshall, or where would he be on our in our pecking order?
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, don't worry about it.
this is a defense that's very tractable. I think the question is more with Michigan, just do they iron out the issues that they've had over the first 3 weeks? Do we see maybe a little bit more creativity in the play calling? Do we see some more deep shots? Because Purdue looks susceptible. Air Force was susceptible, and we didn't see them other than the first play of the game. And it kind of worked, and then we didn't go back to it. So I think the big question is it's all about Wilton Spate and that offensive line and the receivers and that coming together, because everything else should fall into place where Michigan – should be able to outscore these guys based on the talent matchup, based on the coaches involved.
Am I crazy in like going the opposite? Like, I think it could. In fact, I think it will. I think this is like the Wilton Spate, not bounces back all the way, but has a game where people kind of take the breath off of him, and that it.
I could definitely see it both, because Purdue really does not have a pass rush to speak of, which Spate's a lot of Spate's problems have come when he's getting hurried up. And also that their issues tend to be over the middle of the field. Spate's worst reads tend to be when he's throwing to the sideline.
Right.
His throws to the middle of the field have usually been good decisions. He's sailed a couple. But I think for the most part, his mechanics break down more when he's looking to the sideline than when he's throwing over the middle of the field. He tends to look more comfortable on those plays. And if that weakness in the Purdue defense pops up again, this could be a game where he, you know, bounces back. I'm more, to be honest, expecting him to work out his issues after the bye.
Yeah. I think this is where he kind of makes some easy throws, gets to 250 yards, and that gets, you know, the boo birds aren't going to be paying attention to, like, you know, did he make the right reads all the time. He's going to hit some guys who are open. He's going to, I hope they throw downfield and, like, test the 5-9 guy against Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yes.
And you get a couple of those, and you know, he'll have time in the pocket. He should look. I think he'll be able to look good against this team here, and I think the running game too. I think this is a team that, if everything was going how we thought it was going to go this year, Michigan would feel comfortable blowing them out.
From your lips to the football god's ears, we hope. That is another edition of MGO Radio in the books. This is MGO Radio 3.3, live at Holmes Brewery on Jackson Avenue in Ann Arbor. We will catch you next week. And before we go, we would like to thank our sponsors. We are sponsored by Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshire Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, and Michigan Law Grad.
Talk is cheap, Greg Phillips.